he figures everything out. He had to do it by himself when he was on Movistar, but he already put in all the work. Whenever the team didn't support him, he did it individually. Now he went to a team where he's fully supported. I mean, Matteo Jorgensen, let me tell you, in the Tour de France, we are going to see an animal.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Move Podcast, talking about the 2024 Tour of Flanders, the Ronde van Vlaanderen, aka the Ronda. I'm Lance Armstrong, joined by Johan Bruneel, who clearly is not at home. Where?
I'm in.
If you're watching the show, are you in an aquarium or what's happening?
The background of a hotel room. I'm in cycling's paradise in Europe. I'm in on the Costa Blanca in Altea.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, good. JB, you're here in Austin. Looks like you're right across the street from me.
In the new WeDo setup, one of three studios.
Yeah. What do you have? I guess the Wi-Fi is working there.
Yep. We're getting there. We're up and running. We've got a sign out front.
I saw that the other day. That's pretty official.
That's legit.
I was pretty psyched. I mean, not quite the font I would pick, but you know, I figured, you know, for Austin, it'll do. And George, happy Easter, man.
Happy Easter, guys. Good to see everybody.
Now, before we came live and we were doing our pre-show with the members, we call it the members meeting. George was very nervous. He wanted to hurry up and get started with the show. I get it. All right. It's Easter. Happy Easter, everybody. But he's got to be done at a certain time, which is understandable. He's got kids and little kids are excited about Easter egg hunts. We will get to the Tour of Flanders in a second, but these kids are excited. And as you all know, you people that listen a lot, you know that George, I mean, he rolls big, right? He's got rich, fancy, famous friends, right? Jizzies, mansions, you know, five-star everything, right? Well, in the members only meeting, this is perhaps takes the cake. All right. He has to hurry up and talk about the Tour of Flanders because not only does he have an Easter egg hunt, but the motherfucker just told us that this is no ordinary Easter egg hunt, right? He's at another one of his swanky friends' places, God knows where. But this is a special Easter egg hunt. These Easter eggs are being dropped or delivered via helicopter.
By helicopter. And by the way, it's a mutual friend of yours and Johan's, James Whitley's golf club here in South Carolina. And it's going to be a great event for the kids. So I'm very excited. I'll send you some videos. How about that?
I was just going to say, would you please drop some video to us? I mean, literally, speaking of drops, like, what do they do?
They just drop eggs outside of a helicopter over the field and drop a bunch of chocolate eggs.
You rednecks in South Carolina. First, remember a year or so ago, y'all tried to go shoot down that balloon. Yeah, now y'all don't shoot the balloon. Don't shoot in the air. Now you think it's a good idea that we're going to drop Easter eggs above children from a helicopter. Okay.
Correct.
Well, note to parents. All right. I don't know how far up this thing is going to be, but if it's got some chocolate in it and it's plastic, I don't know. I would probably get my kid out of the way.
Or at least wear a helmet.
I was going to say, all children must wear a helmet.
Yeah.
We're going to get into all the action. What an incredible performance by Matthew Vanderpool was, you know, clearly the odds on favorite, if not by a factor of 100. He didn't disappoint, but interesting race. A lot of interesting things happened my initial take just right quick is that it was just so perfect for him, right? Every part of this race, obviously he's on top form, but even the technical side was just so good for him. But before we get into the action, today's show brought to you by Element. You hear us talk about it all the time. We are approaching the summertime. I'm here in Austin. JB's in Austin. It's already warming up. We're going to be out there. We're going to be out there on the bikes, running on the trail, doing whatever. We're going to be sweating. I sweat my ass off. I had to find something to replace all of this sweat that I go through. I've been training like crazy. I found the perfect solution. It is Element. 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium. No sugar, no gluten, No BS in it. It is the real deal. Our listeners get a free Elementy sample pack with any order when you go over, you order at drinklmnt.com/themove. Again, that's drinklmnt.com/themove. Also today brought to you by The Perfect Jean, new partner of ours. This is, I haven't worn jeans in a hot minute. I'm not one of these fashionistas. I know one jean brand in the, actually now I know two jean brands in the world, right? I knew one that's been around forever, hundreds of years. And now I know The Perfect Jean. And I don't wear jeans, but they sent me these jeans. Okay. And y'all know what I wear, right? I roll around literally 6 days a week in sweatpants. Like I just do. If I'm on a Zoom, I mean, this shit's business on top, party on the bottom. Like, I don't even care. I go comfort first. Anyhow, these folks at The Perfect Jean sent me a couple of pairs of jeans. I'm not kidding. I feel like I'm wearing sweatpants. Gee, you get yours? I think they sent all of us some.
I did. In fact, I wore them the other day, sent them a picture. I love them. They're, like you said, super comfortable, stretchy. They don't feel like normal jeans.
No, they stretch. That's what I'm saying. I feel like I'm wearing my sweats. Like if you're standing around, cozy. If you sit down, cozy. If you're walking, cozy. They just, everything about it. Pretty sick. Yeah,
jumping on the e-bike, go get a bite to eat. It's perfect. Yep. Perfect.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they make six fits from skinny, which is for George, to thick. I won't say anything. And they have a waistline offering from 26 to 50 and links from 26 to 38. Big boys, short kings, tall dudes, and all the rest. They got you. For a limited time, our listeners get 15% off their first order plus free shipping at the perfect, check out this URL, make sure you don't mess it up, theperfectjean.nyc, or you can just Google The Perfect Jean. Use the code WEDO15, that's WEDU15, that gets you 15% off. That's theperfectjean.nyc. I have a feeling, I'm not very smart, I have a feeling they're based in New York. Yeah. Anyways. Let's talk about the Tour Finals. I touched on it. I mean, Matthew Vanderpool. Every time he does something like this, Johan, you'll appreciate this. It's probably been a year or so, and we got in this, especially you, me, and George, got in this debate comparing Wout Van Aert and Matthew Vanderpool. And I certainly sided with Wout Van Aert. Every time he does something like this, I'm like, what was I thinking? And the guy is so special.
Yeah. He's a super talent. I think I said, you know, they're kind of equal performance wise, but Matthew's a bit more talented, and you guys went crazy over that statement. I have to say, you know, the guy is special. It's like, you know, everything he does just works out. And for some reason, Wout is super strong, and he just, I don't know if it's bad luck on his side. I mean, obviously, today's race with or without Van Aert was always going to be completely different. But still, you know, if you are the main favorite, the only favorite, a race like this, to win it and to keep it under control is extremely difficult. But he even has that under control, I think.
Yeah, Johan, we were mentioning with about 100 kilometers ago that Vanderpool seemed a bit isolated, didn't have that many teammates, although they kept coming back. But like you said, to be a like standout favorite in a race like Tour de Flanders, where everybody's going to pretty much race against you, mm-hmm. and to still be able to pull it off, not panic, let some pretty dangerous breakaways go up the road. Just incredible what he was able to pull off. Really, really impressive. In my opinion, Tour de Flanders is the hardest race on the calendar. No place to hide. Yep. You burn the most calories. There's danger, there's risk, there's weather changes. It's just, you have a little bit of everything. And they said, a lot of them are saying it was the hardest Tour Finals they've ever done.
Matthew Vanderpool said that in his post-race interview, that was far and away the hardest one that he's ever done, which isn't surprising, right? We've talked about this. We've seen better weather over the last few years, which it makes these races, they're never easy, but it makes them easier. And they just had, you know, at least when my coverage started, it was still basically dry. And then when that rain and wind came, it just makes it very hard. Just one thing I want to say about Tour Flanders, because I agree with everything you just said, George, but for the folks listening who maybe don't follow the classics or don't know these races that well. Here's the thing. Like, there are a few races you probably do know. You probably, most people know what Paris-Roubaix is, right? The, oh, what's that race where they ride across the bricks? That's Paris-Roubaix. And then you have another race, which again, not that well known, but still a monument. And that's Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which is, there are no cobblestones. It's very hilly, very, very difficult. The beauty of the Tour of Flanders, so just picture this, is it's a perfect combination of those two, right? You have very difficult climbs that are cobbled. So you're just combining Liège and Paris-Roubaix equals Tour of Flanders. I agree with you. I mean, if I could go back and as I reflect on my career, and if there was one race, if they just said, okay, dude, you get to pick one race that you never won that you could win or be in a position to win, there is no doubt it would be the Tour of Flanders. Mm. It's just such a cool race.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're talking about the best riders in the world, technical abilities, far superior than most of the Peloton. Lance, like you mentioned in the in our members only meeting, three riders made it up the Koppenberg without having to walk. I mean, we haven't seen something like that, I think, since the '70s, Johan, correct me if I'm wrong. I did point out to my son while we were watching that 17 Tour de Flanders, I never had to walk up to Koppenberg. I was very proud.
That was one of my questions.
And I've done it in the rain. I've done it in everything. Never had to walk up. But one thing you can never forget in a race like Tour of Flanders, you can never give up. I mean, there's guys, when I got third in Tour of Flanders, Leipoist walked up the Koppenberg and still came back and ended up getting second. So it's a race it's a race of attrition where people, even if they're a minute up the road, there's a good chance that they're going to blow up and crack and come back, and Peloton's not going to work. There was no Peloton today, but it was in lots of individuals. But, you know, there's just so many different things going on that you just got to keep pedaling, and there's a good chance that you'll come back at one point.
Or somebody catches you and you form this collective that all has shared interests and perhaps has the legs to work together, and you do make it back, right? I would have loved to have been in one of those positions the few times that I did it. I never was. But just right quick on the Koppenberg, I think, and as everything we just said is exactly right, these are the best riders in the world. If anybody listening just went and rode the Koppenberg, you wouldn't believe it, right? It's very steep. The cobbles are very rough. In the old days, we get to go on the side and it's slightly paved. You go in the drainage part, you catch some smooth pieces. It is so hard. And it's almost like they went in before the race and just added a little mud. And only three guys could get over it. Again, the best riders in the world, only three of them. But here's the thing that stuck out to me is obviously Vanderpool is exceptional. He's also the best cyclocross rider in the world. And so you have all of those things. But even if you're technically great, and you go ride up that thing and you have the technical skills to make it, okay, fine. But if you hit the bottom and your heart rate's 200 and you've been fighting for position and you're 200, whatever, 30 kilometers into the race and you're maxed and you have to tap into those technical skills, it's impossible. Like it's so hard to combine all of these things, being anaerobic, being focused on the technical pieces and watching in front of you. Cause if the dude in front of you goes down or stops or pulls his foot out, you're done. You can't get around them. And as we saw, it's so steep. It's very hard. I mean, when do you see guys walking?
And let's not forget,
by the way, we had the same thing in the women's race. I mean, it's you get stuck behind somebody that stops, you have to stop.
Let's not point out the equipment. I mean, the equipment today in today's age, the gearing, we had 25s in the back about things maximum. They got 30s. They got bigger tires. They have more traction. And there's still only three guys making it up. That tells you, like you said, Lance, their heart rate was 200 at the bottom. It's wet. The crown is slippery. So three riders making it up is just crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if there's somebody in front of you who does one wrong maneuver and you have to, I mean, first of all, you have to get off and you can't get going anymore. That's even worse. You know, once you stop, you walk to the top. There's certain people have tried to get back on their bikes. It's just not possible. What are they using nowadays, George? Like, would they use 36-30 or something? Or
yeah, I would say 36-30 and then at least 30 mil tires. 60 pounds of pressure. So just the equipment choices are a lot better for those types of conditions, wet cobbles, but still very difficult. And just the way they're racing, the only way that a lot of these teams felt like they had a chance was to race early on, like we saw with Mads Pedersen attacking with 100K to go on the Molenberg. And to me, it was a bit, I mean, with how good he's been riding, of course, he crashed pretty hard the other day, but man, he just kept burning so much energy.
We got to talk about that. I mean, one of the, if Matthew Vanderpool was 5 stars, Mads Pedersen had to be 4 stars in terms of rankings of favorites before the race. Like, I get Matteo Jorgensen also had a great week, came into the race is not a 5 or a 4 star, probably a 3 star, but young, inexperienced, doesn't know how this race ebbs and flows, doesn't know how you have to conserve and wait. You have to wait as late as possible. But a guy like Pedersen, man, he should know. When I was watching this, I'm like, this dude's either Superman today or he's about to make a huge mistake. And that comes down, he should know that. And Johan, I sent it on the group chat during the race. Like, who's in the car? Like, I mean, dude, if any of us ever did that, you would have been like, sit up right now. What are you doing? You're not, this is not the
especially time. when you saw that Pedersen was in front, he had Johnny Vermeers with him. So teammate of the big favorite, they basically Little Trek were in a situation where they knew this was not going to go anywhere. You can try. Okay. You can try and see what happens. But once you see after 5-6 kilometers that the situation stays the same, you have to change the strategy. And that's why I don't understand why from the car, there was no instruction to say, okay, you know what? Let's wait. The only explanation I can find is that Pedersen was probably not feeling 100% after his heavy crash, and say, okay, I'm going to try early because I know I'm not going to make it in the final. But still, I mean, there was no way he was going to stay away with the teammate of Van der Poel in the wheel, who collaborated once in a while. And at the end, I mean, to me, it looked like if Pedersen would have been more conservative, he would at least have been able to be in that second group. It would probably been impossible to match Van der Poel, but he would have raced for second, in my opinion, and he didn't. So I think the Little Trek made a mistake there.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Johan. That's if you know you're not on a perfect day, then see if you can get out there, get a small gap, conserve some energy. Obviously, also, and we messaged about this. I mean, that downhill going into the old Quermont, which they call the new Quermont, going down, that's very, very stressful. If you can avoid all of that, that's nice. But that was, in hindsight, it was just not the right move.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, Johan, I think he must have just not been feeling 100%. That crash looked like a very heavy crash. He had bandages all over himself. And man, in the classics, race like Flanders, you got to be perfect. When you have those little injuries, it's going to really affect you, especially in the latter part of the race. In a race like today, when it got cold, it started raining. I think he was just trying to get a little bit of a head start before the Quermont, which actually on the Quermont, Vanderpool did not look like a super Vanderpool. I mean, he didn't really ride away from those guys. They brought him back. But I think that goes to show you how hard the race was, because once they got to the Kamberg about 15K later, I think everybody's legs were just rubber, and Vanderpool's legs was that he was tired. He even said he was dead at the end, but perhaps he did have a little bit extra to ride away. And you had a guy like Jorgensen 6 seconds behind him, and we just watched the gap just slowly get bigger and bigger on that, 2-3% uphill section on the highway. I know that quite well. There's always a feed zone there in the Tour of Flanders, and that's just a harsh section. You could just see for 3-4K straight ahead of you, it's a little bit uphill, and that must have been really tough for Jorgensen mentally to watch him ride away.
I thought at some point, like logically, or in back in the days, he would say, okay, Van der Poel, he knows he's strong, he's the strongest, he has Jorgensen behind, sit up and wait for 5 seconds, have the guy with him. And initially I thought he would do it. But nowadays they just, once they have a gap, man, they just go. Things don't happen anymore.
A 3 to 5 second gap, anybody like Lance, myself, you on a downhill, you're going to close that. especially in a wet downhill, like we would risk our lives to close that gap. But unfortunately, you got Matteo Vanderpool in front of you, who's one of the best bike handlers in the world. And he probably is not even going all out, but he's still taking those corners as fast or faster than Jurgensen. But in a typical situation, you close that gap on a downhill all day long. But that could just goes to show you how complete of a rider Matteo Vanderpool is. And he just bombed that wet, technical, narrow descent like nobody else.
And also how confident he was, because mm-hmm. you know the logical decision would have been, okay, you see Jurgensen, probably the second strongest team in the race, you have him there, let's get him, let's join,
exactly,
gonna work with me and whatever, I'm gonna drop him on the Paterberg anyway.
Yeah.
You know, would have been an easier ride in, but yet you know he just went with 40k to go and just, you know, he just knows he can do it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I think it's important to talk about injuries. I wanted to go back to Vanderpool here for a little bit, because you remember that flip he did in the Olympic mountain bike, and that was nagging him for a long time. I think he's finally just over that, you know, and so he was a bit hindered. George just said it a minute ago, you know, riding injured, it can ruin you. But now the pendulum swings the other way. Wout Van Aert is the injured guy, and I don't know the latest reports on his recovery, but it's
not good.
Not even going to be the Giro, I don't think. But so where I'm going with this is what I don't like in these situations. And this week, you heard it all week. Oh, wow, Van Aert's not going to be there. And it detracts something from Vanderpool and how well he's riding. You guys lived that times. Oh, this year, so-and-so's not there. So-and-so's not there. That's bike racing. Is staying healthy is a big part of the battle.
Yeah, getting through the classics is basically 50% chance of getting seriously hurt. These guys are risking their lives that all 7 hours of today's race and the races leading up to it. I mean, we saw how dangerous those races are in Wergem, where Wout crashed. They were just basically going on a straight road, but the danger and the stress level is so high that you just make these little mistakes that you wouldn't normally make in a much less stressful race.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the danger is around the corner of every one of those preparation races, George. And
yeah,
you know, it's I was watching the commentary in Belgian media, you know, and there some people are really hard on Van Aert. It's like, you know, okay, he is definitely an idol, but man, once something goes wrong, they criticize him so much. Is it, oh, you know, like he crashed on the Paterberg last week. Yeah, why is he there? You know, I don't think he made any mistake. Is it? I mean, now it's the same thing in Wergem. I mean, he could not have avoided it. It's just the circumstance of the race. But he is really banged up. So broken collarbone, had successful surgery. So that should be fixed. He has 7 fractured ribs. Which is very painful. Takes, you know, terrible. 6 weeks to heal at least.
Terrible.
And then this
reminds me of Alaphilippe's accident, and look what that took out of him.
Yeah, and then he also has a fractured sternum, which is really bad. So, the Giro man. His team, obviously they know what they're doing, but I would just straight away call it off. You know, there's no point for him to go to the Giro. He just needs to, you know, change the focus. At the end, maybe he's going to do, you know, he was not going to do the Tour. Now he's probably going to do the Tour. So it'll make Visma stronger and obviously another great teammate for Jonas in July.
Yeah. Well, you know, the one part I feel they have all this training dialed in, and we've spoken about it many times. How do they mimic the, you know, the intensity of racing, which is, I still have a hard time understanding that, but also how do you mimic the reaction that you need in a race like the classics, when you're a split second within crashing at all points in those races. So perhaps all that training, you know, you don't have that as sharp of an edge as you would had you been racing leading up to those races. And they may take another look at that next year leading up to the classics. Just, there's just so much going on that your reaction time and ability to react to somebody falling or somebody making a mistake in front of you has to be on point at all times in those races.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. JB, you brought up Alaphilippe or you mentioned Alaphilippe. I want to talk about him, and I want to talk about Quickstep. I don't know what we call it now. Slow Step. Thumbs up. I want to touch on that, but I also want to spend a little more time talking about Mateo Jorgensen, who we've talked a lot about this spring and even last summer during the tour. We may be watching the makings of something here, but before we get into it, today's show also brought to you by AG1. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That you know me. That's why for the last 5 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day. No exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. And it makes me feel energized and focused. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. Healthy, here's the thing, right? And I love saying this, and I mean it, like taking control. This is all about taking control of your health. I love the fact that so many folks are actually starting to do that. And so many of you all out there are starting with AG1. But a healthy aging, it just shouldn't be complicated, right? The thought of taking dozens of supplements or pills every day is, at least to me, sounds exhausting. But with AG1, it's just one daily scoop and it covers all of my nutrient gaps. And as I also joke and say, which is true, I just suck at eating fruits and vegetables. Our listeners get a special offer here. If you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs. This is it right here. I just got back last night. It's on the road. Had these babies with me. Anyways, you get 5 free of those travel packs on your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/themove. Again, that's drinkag1.com/themove. Also today brought to you by HVMN. We often hear that fasting and exercise are good for the brain. HVMN launched the world's first drinkable ketone in 2017. Ketone IQ is their latest innovation on ketones with improved effectiveness, taste, and cost. Ketone IQ delivers clean fuel that can cross the blood-brain barrier, supplying your brain and body sustained energy, focus, and sharpness, putting you in flow lasting for hours. It is no wonder that HVMN supplies ketones to more than 60% of the teams in this peloton and has an active $6 million contract for the U.S. Special Operations Command. You can save 30% off your first subscription order of Ketone IQ at hvmn.com/themove. Again, that's hvmn.com/themove. Last one of the day brought to you by Caldera Labs. Gentlemen, we all know that first impressions matter. That clearly. Clearly, this dude that's dropping these Easter eggs today for the Easter hunt that the George is about to go to. I mean, I don't know if it's a first date or something, but this guy is trying to come in with a serious first impression. He's got a helicopter dropping Easter eggs, right? But in all honesty, first impressions do matter. And if you're not taking care of your skin, that's going to be the first thing that someone notices. And instantly either thinks that you're a lot older than you are, or you just don't care about your appearance. Show them that you do and make a first great impression with Caldera Lab. As men, why does aging have an impact on our mindset, our confidence? Well, if you're a dude, you know what I'm saying. I've got my favorites here. I've got the base layer, which I've gotten religious with. Got the deep. You got the face. This is my wife loves this because I grew up all those years racing. I never wore sunscreen. How messed up is that? This stuff right here, the face SPF, is you don't even know it's on. She's like, whoa, you're going to wear sunscreen? I was like, yes, I am. So yeah, I know. Win-win for me. And just for our audience, we have an exclusive offer. This is the best offer available anywhere. So use the code WEDU, WEDU. At calderalab.com. That's 20% off when you use the code WEDU. See it at, and then you go to the website there, calderalab.com, calderalab.com. Use the code WEDU. All right, let's talk about Jorgensen because he's, I don't know. I do know. I know what it's like when you come into the sport and you feel like you've got some potential and you get that momentum, right? It just builds. And this kid, he took all the momentum from last year. He switched teams. He's clearly on the right path. He's had an amazing spring, won Paris-Nice. He came into this race as a top favorite outside of Matthew Vanderpool. I mean, Johan, this is a question for Johan. Because you know this stuff better than certainly we do. Like, what do you see in Matteo Jorgensen, right? And take us, put aside that he's a friend of ours and is so generous with his time to come on the show. I don't know. I'm like, and we get the question all the time from American fans, like, when are we going to have another great American? And we've always said, look, just give it time. We're starting to see some stuff. But now, I mean, now we have to start having a more serious conversation.
Yeah, I think we're looking at a potential great rider. Let's not forget, you know, so he won Paris-Nice as a stage racer against Roglic, against Evenepoel, against a lot of good riders.
Yes.
He just recently won this semi-classic in Belgium, which is a completely different kind of cycling, right? He won in Waregem. And now, through circumstances, he was the leader of Visma. Personally, I think that's a step too quick. I think today, for example, if Matteo Jorgensen races on Tour de Flanders in Visma Lisa bike with Wout van Aert as a leader, he would have had a better chance, because I think he would be strategically better used rather than being, you know, the leader and having to race mano a mano against Mathieu van der Poel. But I saw something really interesting, which I really liked. I don't know if you saw that, George. Before Duars door Vlaanderen, the race in Waregem, he won, right? You've done that race a couple of times. It's a mini Tour of Flanders, right?
Yeah.
He published a little writing he did the day before, like a little scenario. This kilometer, be in front here. And he visualized it before he went to bed. And in the last, so he said, okay, kilometer so much, so be in front. Here, we can recover. And then in the last 15 kilometers, figure out a way to win solo.
Wow, that's amazing.
I did not know that.
No. And so, you know, this is a guy who knows what he's doing, for sure. You know, he figures everything out. He had to do it by himself when he was on Movistar, but he already put in all the work. Whenever the team didn't support him, he did it individually. Now he went to a team where he's fully supported. I mean, Matteo Jorgensen, let me tell you, in the Tour de France, we are going to see an animal in function of course, Jonas Vingegaard. But man, that guy has a huge engine and knows what he wants.
And Johan, we all know how difficult that is. You can write it down, you can visualize it, but these are the most difficult races in terms of positioning. So for instance, like that downhill leading up to the Quermont, one of the scariest downhills in all of cycling, in my opinion. But yes, for him to write down, I need to be up front there and I will be up front. That's no easy task. That's almost as hard as winning the race. This is as hard as it gets in terms of positioning. Unfortunately, he didn't have what it took to ride with Van der Poel today, and you know, ended up probably running out of energy there because he lost a lot. But there's a lot of pressure there, and he's had an incredible start of the year, and he should be very proud of his performances.
I mean, no. By the way, nobody had the legs to ride with Matthew Van der Poel today. Nobody. So let's just establish. We know that, right? That's he was next level. As I watched the race, I chalked that up to just inexperience, which is okay. Right. Mm-hmm. You got to go do these things and make mistakes and know what it feels like to get to the last 45 minutes of the race and say, oh, I mean, even Matthew Bandra, I loved his, he did two interviews at the finish. One was in Flemish or Dutch and one was in English. And of course, you know, he doesn't know who's listening or if they're recording it or if it's streaming live. He was like, I am so fucked. Yeah, I bet you are. So, you know, Jorgensen just doesn't, he didn't. It's 270 kilometers with the best guys in the world. I mean, it's impossible to know what that's going to be like.
And by the way, last thing, real quick,
George, when you talk about writing stuff down, folks, just, and I want to just make this easy to understand. I mean, if it's the 100 meter dash, you can write it down, right? All right. I'm going to get a good warm up. I'm going to get in the blocks. I'm going to have a great start, right? I'm going to stay low. I'm going to come up. I'm going to hit full stride at 50 meters and I'm going to try and win. This is the equivalent, because to George's point, this is the equivalent of doing all of that, but you didn't write down that at 50 meters or 60 meters, some guy runs out of the stands and tries to tackle you. That's because that's what can happen. You have 200 other guys that also have their own agendas and, you know, 20 other teams that have their own agendas. Like, nobody does that.
Yeah. And since we're pointing out Americans, let's not forget Magnus Sheffield sneaks in for sixth place. Didn't even see him pretty much the whole race. Strong in my opinion, rode a very smart race, hid, saved energy, conserved, and ended up getting sixth place in Tour Flanders. Young kid, too. I mean, I think he's 23 years old. So incredible results for Magnus Sheffield.
Look, y'all, let's not be mistaken. This is coming. Everybody that's asked us the last 5 years, where's the Americans? Where's the Americans? We had to talk about, there's seven Americans in the Tour. We had to fucking sit there and count them. They were pack filling. It's coming. And it's coming. Here's why it's coming. It's coming because even if these guys are friendly, believe me, they're watching each other. And Look, we've all been there, George. Like, I'll just be totally honest. Fucking Bobby Julia gets third in the Tour de France. And I love Bobby. I'm like, all right, yo, if he can get third in the Tour de France, I can win straight up. So even if you have a decent relationship, you're like, wait, they did that. I read about the new contract. I see all the headlines. I see all the buzz. I see all the talk. Okay. All right. All right. Let's see how this plays out. Like, that's just, you see it in every, you're seeing it in Denmark for sure. That's why Denmark, because of Vingegaard, is having this lift. It's absolutely the reason.
You see it in all sports and all business and all facets of life. If you see someone who looks and sounds like you accomplishing things, it's attainable.
It's coming. Yep. As Prime says, for those in England or wherever the hell you are listening to this show, Prime is Deion Sanders. He's the football coach at the University of Colorado, where my daughter is about to graduate in May, so we're sort of buffs. But he says, we coming. That's all he says. We coming. So for you American cycling fans, I think you should just be walking around today saying, we coming.
Yeah.
Let's talk about JB. You want to talk about Alaphilippe? Because
Wout van Aert's injury reminded me of that tumble that Alaphilippe took and has not been the same. He's getting closer, but that affected him for 2 years.
Well, yeah,
and the whole team.
I don't know, Johan, I can't remember if we said it on the show or in the members only meeting, but I said, or I remarked that Patrick Lefebvre must be livid. And you said, I don't think so. But now that I think about it, might that be the problem? I mean, if you have an owner and a legendary owner, a guy who's had the program for, 30 years, he has been sort of the Bill Belichick. I mean, he's driven that program. He's been very tough. He's in the Hall of Fame. But if you got a guy that's like, meh, okay, and it's just sort of checked out, well, dude, fish stinks from the head.
He gave an interview. He gave an interview last week, and he says, you know what? I look myself in the mirror, and I realize I've made mistakes in terms of how to run the team, who to hire, who to renew too early. So I agree. I mean, on a personal level, at some point, he's such a long time in the business that it's basically, it's copy paste at some point. Right. But he's a winner, and he must not be happy. The Quickstep team in the classics, it's not this year, it's not last year, it's been a number of years now that we've seen that in those races they're not a factor anymore. Today their first rider is 18th place, Yves Lampaert. But they have not been visible at all, and there was never any situation in the race where we see, okay, here's Quickstep, these things of these races, and they're not there anymore. So, of course, we all know that they've shifted their attention towards Remco and building a team around him. But still, they are supported by mainly Belgian and mainly Flemish sponsors who want to have their name in the media in those races. No, so
they were all there at the hospitality today, the VIP section, all this stuff. These folks, it probably felt like a funeral. That's not fun. This is their, if you are a Belgian sponsor and you sponsor that team and it's the Tour of Flanders, it is the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That is the Super Bowl straight up. The last thing I will, or the, my last thing I'll say about this is the biggest loser in all of this will be Remco. I mean, that culture is not good. That's and it's hard to reverse it. Not impossible, but it's hard. And he's not old. He's a young kid. He's got tons of potential. He will suffer from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did what they could to support him, but I think it's not in the DNA of the team. They have a different DNA. This team has been dominating for decades in their specialty. You know, to shift that, I think that, you know, they've hired good riders, they hired new staff, but the people at the top are still the same. And that's just not in their blood, you know, to be a stage racer and be calculating and being preparing meticulously for a long-term objective like this.
And we'll see what happens in the next couple of races, but I'm sure a lot of the pressure is going to fall once again on Remco for Liège Bastogne Liège. See if they can save their classic right. season.
Of course.
He will be good. He will be good there. He will be good there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I actually, you know where I am. I saw him training here because he lives here. So he's ready. He traveled to the Tour of the Basque Country. I think we're going to see him next week in the front of the race. But it's definitely a big challenge to shift the focus from something that you've been dominating for decades towards, you know, trying to be a grand tour team.
Yep. Hey, before we go, this last thing, worth noting, Michael Matthews relegated. I bring this up because he was relegated. He got third. He was relegated to whatever place. So this is an opportunity to stand on the podium, but for him, that would have been two podiums in a row. This is a big deal. Like if you're Michael Matthews and you're that team and you did two World Cups or two monuments in a row, you're on the podium. That sucks. I need to go back and watch what happened more closely.
Yeah, but I feel for him. That was a ragged sprint. Nobody had anything left in their lives.
And people
it was
crossed
just all over the place.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate to see,
but that sucks.
Also, I mean, what does not suck is Alpecin. Two monuments, two wins.
Yeah.
That's,
you know, that would have been nice to say at the start of the show. That's actually really important. Fuck. I'm not very good at this.
Hey, I'm going to give Johan some love before we go. If you haven't been paying attention, Johan and George have been doing the Move Legends, bringing in some incredible people from the sport of cycling. And we just released the interview of Johan and Bernard Hinault. It's on YouTube because it's in French and it's English subtitled. Highly recommend you go listen to it. It's incredible. And here are a few of the comments real quick that people threw on there. Spinoza writes, Johan's language skills are exceptional. NFKB writes, as a French listener of the Move for a long time, I second that. They're fans of your skills. Chris writes, if a Martian came to Earth and leaves in 10 days, Johan will speak perfect Martian.
I don't know about that.
Let's see. Michael writes, that was one of the best videos I've watched and a revelation to hear from Hino's perspective. Chapeau, Bernard, and chapeau, we do. And one more message for you from Made in the Attic, Matt in the Attic. Johan, no more excuses for Le Move French edition.
Let's find a few more hours in a day then.
I know.
And find somebody that's got enough, find a Frenchman who's got enough wit. You know, this is platform. You can't just stand there like a
you guys hear that?
Is that the helicopter?
God, the helicopter. You know what, folks? That's our cue. We gotta go. George is, I know we're used to this. Yeah, we can make up a whole new thing, you know, jizzies and bleh. I don't know. An Easter egg hunt dropped from a helicopter? Fuck, what is this? Bro. Okay.
Right. Okay, George. Go enjoy it.
Thanks, guys. Ciao.
Right. Happy you guys. Have a great day.